Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as sober. Sober. Sober as
welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Jessica Bedis Wilson. Jessica is Koyakon, Athabaskan, and Inupiat. Jessica is from Hughes, Alaska on her father's side and Allakaket, Alaska on her mother's side, but she grew up most of her life in Fairbanks, Alaska. Jessica's sobriety date is January 29th of 2012. And on this show, Jessica courageously shares her story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Jessica Bedis Wilson. Hi Jessica, how are you?
Good, thank you.
So Jessica, can you go ahead and introduce yourself so everybody could get to know you?
Yes. My name is Jessica Bedis Wilson. My Danaka name is Hatlihiathna, and it means I have a good head. I got the name when I was 3 and inquisitive and mischievous. My father's family comes from Hughes, Alaska, and my mother's family comes from Allakaket. They're both along the Koyukuk River. I'm Koyukon at Inupiat, they say it with a T at the end. I grew up most of my life in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I've been a military wife for almost 16 years, and I got one son.
How long have you been sober again?
My sobriety date is January 29th of 2012.
Wow, amazing. Jessica, can you let people know what things looked like before you got sober?
Yes. My first drink was at 10. It's just a sip or so. My first drunk was 13, and my first blackout was 15. And then I partied every weekend thereafter. I grew increasingly more impulsive. I could never hold a binge. I'm small. I couldn't build up a tolerance. So I'd just get drunk really fast, and I was a runner. So I black out. My friends would cut me off, and then I'd run away. And here in Alaska, there's a lot of terrible things that can happen to you if you run out into the cold. And I did. I was found in the snow one time. It must have been 20 below. I've attempted suicide 16 times. I've been in and out of hospitals. I was in AP classes. I had a good summer job. And then it just changed. I felt like I was nothing. There was definitely some racism involved that also added to just feeling ostracized, feeling like I had a letter A on my chest. I failed my senior year. I spent final exams crying in bed, mournful crying. And then I drank like my life didn't matter. I still drank to blackout. I was still an awful drunk. And I got arrested when I was 25. And I ended up in Pierce County Jail. And it saved my life. That was the last time I drank. That was October 1st, 2011. But I relapsed on something else on January 29th, 2012. So that's my sobriety date to me. And then, through all that awfulness, I got sober. You know, between 18 and 20, I hallucinated for 2 years. I'm bipolar type 1. And when you add a really big dose of trauma and alcohol and whatever the else I was taking, it can turn into psychosis. I was really sick. I'm really glad I survived that. But when I was 13 months sober, I met someone like me who needed someone like me. And I was there and I shared my story and my hope. And she saved my life too. And I stopped being mad at God.
You mentioned racism in there. You told a story about, going to a market and you were looking at a jeweler at some jewelry at a booth, and some white ladies said to each other, "Are you watching her?" Which made you have feelings of sadness and inadequacy. You said it kind of triggered thoughts of trauma. Can you elaborate on that?
It was this trauma. I told a boy from high school what happened to me, and he said, I'll paraphrase, I have to paraphrase. He said to me that I was lying because everyone knows that Native girls are promiscuous. And I believe he probably spread the rumor. Because this is high school, you know? It was high school. There was also another boy that I had known since I was 8. We'd been going to school together since elementary. And he opened a door for me at my high school here in Fairbanks. And he said, "Here you go." And then he called me a name. It was a mean play on my name. And he did it again later on. Whew. I think that's one of those traumas that are waiting in the wings. You know, being followed in the store. But in the end, when those women were cruel to me at the market, it just brought it all up. Good grief, just like a big rush. It was overwhelming. The amount of that oppression that we can live under, we've experienced oppression. That is oppression. And how do I escape it? I remember I was listening to another one of your speakers, and he talked about the Red Road. And I believe we can walk above oppression if we take the Red Road. Should we live in our culture and our sobriety and be proud of who we are and where we came from, because we should be. We are wonderful. Our communities and our culture, our traditions, our skills. We are beautiful people. We are rich.
Yeah, and I think it's funny how, people may think that at this day and age, there shouldn't be any like systemic racism or discrimination, but it's definitely there because I've experienced it myself, especially, with people of authority. Like when I would get drunk and get picked up by the CSP or whatever they call it nowadays and be brought to the drunk tank, there was some cruel people, the workers there. And even police officers in this day and age. I've experienced it myself, too, who are, you know, may not say it directly, but, you know, their actions and their work, like their, what they are doing expresses their racism or discrimination, you know, even like you said, how people think Native women are promiscuous, you know, or Native guys are drunk and homeless and dirty, you know. All of that stigma that people put on Native people, it's still around, you know, maybe not enforced like it was back then, but I think people have to realize that there is still that discrimination going on. And, you know, people may not talk about it. It may be one of those traumas, like you said, that people stuff inside them like I did. You know, I was super pissed off and super mad, you know, afterwards. But I never talked about it, you know, to other people. Maybe to my close family, like my sisters or something. But you are absolutely right about how people need to express how our cultures and how being Indigenous, Native, and, you know, we are so rich with culture and our traditions, and just our people are just amazing. And nowadays it's starting to come out, especially with social media, you know, and it's amazing to see all of this come into play, because before there was nothing, you know. John Wayne was playing an Indian guy in his movies, you know. Now we have Indigenous people playing Indigenous people, or all these Indigenous creators and authors, and even on TikTok, even, it's just so crazy and wonderful, you know. I just feel that. But when you are mentioning that trauma, that is absolutely right, because anybody can make that assumption about Native people just by the visualization that they see, you know, people out on the streets, or, you know, another big one is about, you know, the houseless community of, you know, Native people are a big part of it, or people see that, you know, and they bring it up. You know, it just brings into the conversation of how we can start chipping away at the stigma, and what can we do to help others, you know.
We use our voices. We find them. Like your voice is, you know, my voice is a seed. Your voice is a tree, man. Go you. It's like this is, we can speak. Because, you know, our houseless communities, they are our most vulnerable communities, our most traumatized. They deserve our greatest love. And we start by talking, and then we start by planning. We are not weak people. We are strong. We can live off the land. We know how to be close to one another. We know how to get through any trauma together, because though we experience trauma and grief, we also know how to get through them.
Yeah, being strong and resilient, mm-hmm. and sober.
Yeah.
You know?
Is that your shirt? Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so it's just people starting to, like you, starting to, you know, to tell their story. It's so courageous, you know, and it's so, it is scary, you know, because you're opening yourself up to, you know, what people think. But, you know, at the same time, it shows there's so many people that are in the same boat, that they're not alone, you know?
Yes. I did get early on in like 2016, when I was, you know, making all those posts. I was a little angry then too, just FYI. a man messaged me, and he was so mad that he said, "I'm going to delete you." Like, and I took it to heart. I didn't even know him. I don't know why I took it to heart. But I didn't I didn't post anything for a whole 2 weeks after that. You know, but there were still those women that told me that they didn't feel alone. And I didn't feel alone when they told me that. For a long time, even in sobriety, I'd go through bouts with struggling with my PTSD, where I would feel like I wore that scarlet letter. And then, miraculously, I'd speak to someone or message with someone about this, and they'd say, you know, "I'm like you." But I'd look at them and I'd think, this person is kind and funny, and I really like them. And if they're like me, and they suffered trauma like me, so here's the math. If we both suffered trauma, and I didn't like myself, but I liked them, that doesn't add up. So, you know, logically, I could only like myself too. They helped me love myself. They helped me love myself. Speaking out helped me love myself after all those years.
Man, it seems like once you start to acknowledge what's actually going on inside of you and have the realization that other people are going through that or went through that just like you, you start to be more accepting to yourself, you know, about stop being so hard on yourself, you know, and realizing that you are a good person. We are good people, you know. We may have done some crazy stuff when we were drunk or, you know, trying to cope with all these crazy traumas and stuff like that. It shows you that, man, I am, you know, I deserve space too. You know, I am here and I'm not what I used to be in those times that I drank or in those times that somebody, you know, did drugs or something, you know. It just makes you realize that you're living in the present now and then you're not that person anymore.
Yeah, like I just snap back to where I'm sitting, like, oh, I'm safe.
Yeah.
My first sober mentor, I would call her crying and she'd say, "Jessica, look to your right." And I would. And she'd say, "What do you see?" And I'd say, "My closet." And she'd go, "Jessica, now look to your left. What do you see?" And I'm all, "A window." She's all, "Okay, now look forward. What do you see?" I'm like, "A ceiling," you know, because I'm laying in bed crying. But, and then she'd go, "Do you see a Mack truck coming at you?" I'm like, "No." And she'd say, "Then you're safe. Now pray."
Yeah, like you live in that situation or you're in that situation and you're safe, but in your mind you're thinking of stuff in the past or the stuff that you are ashamed of or, you know, all these crazy things that are coming into your head, you know. It's hard to realize in the moment where you are, you know, safe and warm in this place, because dang, I used to walk Anchorage when I was kicked out by, you know, somebody or whatever, you know, or I chose to go and drink and they don't allow it. And those crazy situations, like you said, we could have, you know, we could have perished out in the cold somewhere, you know, like so many other of our, you know, friends or family have. And just sitting there, sitting in the moment to realize, wow, I'm safe here in this environment, you know, it really brings it into into realization.
I too have, you know, like been at a party and we all ran, and so I had to walk across town in the cold, in my high-heeled vinyl boots, and my winter jacket. I don't know, like, where my hat or gloves went, but I would walk all the way home in the middle of the night, just tiny, this tiny girl. One time I hitchhiked, but I had tweezers in my hand, and this was like, I was in his car, and I thought, I might have to stab him with the tweezers in my hand, so I'm going to put my hand by the side of my knee. And then I thought, this is a really messed up situation. I'm sobering up pretty quick. And then I said, can you just let me out? And he did, because he probably, I don't know. I don't know if he was scared too, but I was scared. I mean, for all he knew, I could have been holding a knife in my hand. And, you know, there are other times I did have to walk alone. It is really dangerous being drunk in the cold. I lived in Georgia for a while. I've been sober in Washington, Georgia, and North Carolina. And when I lived in Georgia, I told them, you know, how I almost froze. And then I said to my sober buddy, I was all, so have you ever woken up on a Sunday sunburnt? Like, because and she's all, no. Like, what kind of question is that? And then I just kind of let it go. But you know, up here it is really dangerous. Down there, not so much.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. You know, maybe they have heat stroke or something. I don't know. It's the environment. But you're right. It could be dangerous up here. Jessica, what does your sobriety look like now?
So I started out working 6 hours a week when I was, like, you know, right after I got out of jail. I just got a job before that. So I worked 6 hours a week for a whole year. And then I just kept getting jobs everywhere we moved. And then we moved back to Fairbanks. And I got a job at a company here. I started as the receptionist, and by then, you know, I could show up on time. My word, I followed what I said. I did what I promised, and I worked harder. I didn't stop working. You know, if I had no work left, I'd go ask for more. I started as the receptionist, and I just moved up, and now I have a pretty good job that I get to learn with, that has a lot of opportunities. And it's because I got to grow up. I got to heal. I got to learn how to be a functional human being. I got to leave those old instincts, those old character defects behind. People trust me because I'm trustworthy. I earned it. I'm kind to people. I'm very stable. It's amazing. I'm happy. All the things that I thought when I was 18 years old, all the things that I thought about myself, all the things I thought about myself at the height of my addiction, at the height of my mental illness, at the height of my trauma. Since then, in the past 10 years, I have proved those beliefs wrong. I am lovable. I am respectable. I am functional. I am stable. I'm a good mom. I am a good community member, and I'm a good worker, and I'm funny. If I keep saying I'm funny, it's like I'm willing it into existence. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to feel imposter syndrome. I'm not. I am here because people helped me, and I will help others as long as I live, because I am so grateful to be alive.
Awesome. You said now you help people. What is one piece of advice that you would give to somebody that's thinking of getting sober or, you know, like new to recovery?
Are you desperate? I was desperate. I thought I would never be happy. I felt like alcohol was the only thing that might help. But, you know, damn it, because it never did. It stopped. It stopped helping. And I was scared. I thought if I quit drinking, then I'd just be Jessica, miserable, hating herself. But I was wrong. I was wrong. If you're thinking about getting sober, you're worth it. And I believe in you. I have faith. Tell someone the truth. Don't keep it in.
Wow, Jessica, that was amazing. Is there any other thing you'd like to say before we end this?
To anyone else in recovery who's also struggled with, you know, trauma and mental illness, you know, there's so much stigma around suffering a mental illness or PTSD. But you're not alone. I'm 10 years sober, and I have a diagnosis that will be with me for a while, long while, you know, and I've learned to live with it, and I'm happy, and I'm a little bit chaotic, but I get that. I guess that's good. What do you think?
I think your share is amazing, and man, I really want to thank you so much for, you know, having the courage to come on here and share your story once again. And man, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ralph. You're awesome. This is so cool. So important. I listened to the podcast where you mentioned, you know, people in the village could be listening, and this could be the only recovery that they could listen to. That's important. Thank you.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who's walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. on 107.7 and also 91.9 FM KSTK, Stikine River Radio, serving Wrangell, Alaska. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.